It is very good afternoon. It's Niall Boylan with you for the next hour or so. And we are going to talk about the EU Migration Pact. But do we have any control over our own country? Do we have any say anymore in what happens in this country? It seems not. The general election, of course, will tell all. Mind you, I said the same thing before the local and the European elections. And as I said already, we just send four of the main political parties back to Europe to make decisions on our behalf. Individuals who are gone to Europe to represent the Irish people, some of whom don't even know what a woman is. Anyway, the Dáil has voted to opt into the EU's asylum and migration pact by a margin of 79 to 72 votes. Now, let's be clear about this. There was a whip system in place, obviously. And I've already spoken to one or two Fianna Fáil TDs today who won't come on to talk about it. And one in particular said that he didn't want to come on because he was uncomfortable talking about it. In other words, he didn't want to vote yes. Now, these people will probably deny it afterwards that they voted. Well, when I say they deny they voted yes, they can't do that. But they will deny that they agreed with it when it's too late and the damage is done. The pact shouldn't have gone through. It should have probably been put to the people in what they call an ordinary referendum, but it wasn't. It was debated in the House both this week and last week, and the government had argued that Ireland must look across the European Union for solutions to raising or rising levels of migration rather than to isolate itself. In March, the Minister of Justice, Helen McEntee, according to RTÉ, announced that Ireland would opt into the pact, which will introduce legally binding processing times for international protection applicants. It will also require a substantial increase in the number of staff processing applications and the building of new accommodation centres, enhanced border security and an increase in collection of fingerprints to Eurodac. Now, Minister McEntee, of course, welcomed the Dáil vote. I'm sure she did. And she said the pact will take time to implement. But in Ireland, we're not waiting and have already introduced the improvements to our system. Really, that's why people are still sleeping in tents along the canal and Kildare Street and everywhere else. We must protect those, she said, who need it, where they're fleeing from war or persecution, but also be able to easily return people with no entitlement to be here, who have no entitlement to be here. I would love to see them implement that because so far they haven't done that. Anyway, I'm asking, do you welcome the pact? And can Ireland benefit greatly from this agreement? Just for those who don't know, some of the things that are in the pact are the main points of the EU Migration Pact. The Asylum Procedure Regulation, which establishes a common and fair and efficient procedure for deciding on asylum application. This is from the EU website, by the way. The recast of the Eurodac regulation will turn the existing Eurodac database from an asylum database into a fully fledged asylum and migration database. Sounds like the same thing, if you ask me. The new database, they say, will support the asylum system and help manage irregular migration. I don't know why they couldn't be doing this all along. The new screening regulation, they say, sets up uniform rules ensuring checks and proper registration of irregular migrants and asylum seekers entering the EU and a seamless link to ensuring return or asylum procedures. The qualification regulation replaces the qualification currently that we have, the qualification directive. It incorporates the Geneva Convention into EU law and aims to ensure that member states apply common criteria to qualify persons and beneficiaries of international protection. And the revised reception conditions directive will, they're all fancy names, aren't they, will provide for minimum standards of assistance for asylum applicants by member states and ensuring adequate standards of living for those arriving to the EU and seeking international protection. And then they go on about the union settlement and humanitarian admission framework, and that's all about people coming across the Mediterranean and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, it's basically stuff that we should be doing right now. We should have been doing it for the last 5 years, probably for the last 20 years, but it's only been a problem in the last 5 years. But they say we'll benefit greatly because, of course, the EU will now be supervising everything. They'll be like daddy and mammy telling us, you know, how we should be doing it rather than the people screaming and shouting at them all the time. But I'm asking you, do you think we can benefit from it? Well, at this point, it's already voted for. It's irreversible. We can't get out of it. So now we have to make the best of it. So do you think we can get any benefit whatsoever from this? Let's look at this as a positive thing. Can we do that? Is that even possible? I don't know. Let me just go to Eric Nelligan from Aintu, who joins me. Eric, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Niall. Thank you for having me on.
I think it's a sad day for democracy. I think it's a sad day for our sovereignty. We've just handed over. I mean, don't get me wrong. The EU generally is a net gain because I wanted to run, obviously, you know, as a European MEP. And I do believe there's a net gain being part of something bigger. But I mean, you do have to retain some of your sovereignty. And one of those, the main parts of our sovereignty is controlling our own borders. And we now don't own that anymore.
You're 100% right. What we have done here is we have further eroded and we've transferred a sizable chunk of our sovereignty to the EU, and people can decide themselves whether they find the EU to be a positive or a negative at the moment. But what we do know is the general population's opinion and desire to and positivity towards the EU has dropped substantially over the last number of years. So there was a time when 95% of the population would have seen the EU as a positive to Ireland. Those numbers are dropping. And instances like this, transferring our sovereignty and basically allowing the EU to decide how many migrants we can accept or how much we have to pay in fines if we don't accept them, is further eroding trust and confidence in the EU.
I mean, that's part of the pact, of course, and Ireland will now be obliged to take a certain number of asylum seekers per year or people seeking international protection. But we've no idea what that number is. Roderick O'Gorman had suggested that 30,000 could be the new normal per year. Others have suggested the figure could be a lot lower than that. And if you're right, if we decline to take them and we want to send them back to the EU or a safe country, we now have to pay to the receiving country to accommodate them and look after them to the tune of, well, the suggestion was 25,000 per person annually. That's got to be a massive bill for Ireland because, of course, our obligations will be based on our GDP, which is an inflated figure anyway.
You're correct. One of the questions the ANPO leader, Pat O'Toole, asked in the Dáil in the last month was how much it will cost to be part of this migration pact. And we couldn't be given a straight answer. So any of your listeners out there, can you imagine signing up to something where you were promising or you're guaranteeing or you by law you would have to pay for, and you don't know what it's going to cost? Imagine signing up to a mortgage not knowing how much the repayment was, or signing up to a car loan not knowing what the repayment was. So it's basically we've given a blank check to the EU, and all we know is that we've signed up to a mandatory fair share principle, which is a formula based on the population of the country and the GDP of the country. And I'm sure you've mentioned many times in your show how the Irish GDP is way out of sync due to the large number of multinationals we have in the country. So the impression is out there that Ireland is an exceptionally well-off country, and many of your listeners realise, listening to this, who are on the poverty line, that that's not the case. So we will have to take a higher percentage of the EU migrants we would normally be able to, or have to take, or be able to afford to take, now that we've signed up to a ranking based on our GDP. So,
I mean, as it stands, we have an obligation under the convention to take asylum seekers or people who are fleeing war. We don't have any obligation to take, you know, economic migrants. So that group in the middle, we have an obligation to take people in, you know, who work here for, you know, under the visa program. And they've changed that, by the way. They've brought in new laws about that. We'll talk about that during the week. But, you know, to streamline that and make that a bit easier for people who want to come here, who have skills, who want to work. But, you know, those people in the middle, the economic migrants, we have no obligation. We can return people, or we should be able to return people. We don't do it for some reason. We also don't have an obligation to take people past the ports, you know, who have no identification, who have no passport, who have destroyed their passport, because that is an illegal activity when you enter the state with no identification with the intention of deceiving the authorities. But now it looks like we'll have no choice. But okay, let's look at, is there any pluses in this at all? It seems it's already there, Eric. It's already been voted for by weasels in the Dáil last night, who obviously went with their party and went with the whip, right? And I've spoken to a couple of them already who I know regret voting yes for this. It shouldn't have gone through. But is there any benefits we can look? For example, you know, the screening and regulation, the new enhanced Eurodac system, that maybe we will have a better idea, you know, Johnny from Nigeria or wherever, Albania or wherever he's coming from, that we have a better idea who they are, have they had a criminal record in the past, have they been arrested within the European Union? We'll have a better idea of those kind of things. Is there any plus in that at all for us?
Well, Niall, the first thing is, it doesn't matter what pluses are there. If our government refuses to implement them, what's the point in having them? So we all remember that came out there about a month ago where there was 180 people in Ireland who had been involved in illegal activity, who would have been accepted to be sent back to other EU countries. Those other EU countries acknowledged that 180 people were to be sent back, and we transferred a grand total of 3 out of 180. So if the Irish government, the Irish state, is not following the laws that already exist, why in God's name would they follow potential laws that might come in because of this pact? So,
well, Helen McEntee says it'll take time to implement, but Ireland will not be waiting, and we've already introduced improvements to our system. I don't see those improvements in the system.
The big flaw is that everything takes so long. This pact talks about a 12-week limit on making asylum processes. that we, as a country, we could do that anytime we wanted. We don't need to be part of a pact to do that. However, it's taking months and years for decisions to be made. There are instances of people taking up to 10 years for a decision to be made on an asylum process. So the problem is not the pact. It doesn't matter what the laws are. If the government can't or is unable or unwilling to enforce the regulation that Ireland currently has in place, why in God's name would it be better to sign up to a pact where, let's be honest, we will be fined? Because the EU, they're good at many things. They're really, really good at implementing fines. We know that Ireland is currently fined every year for a vast plethora of pacts that we signed up to that we failed to follow. So you can be 100% certain we will be fined for not taking enough asylum seekers. We will have to contribute towards, we will have to give contributions financially towards this pact. However, the Irish government would probably be unable to take advantage of it because our systems are so poor in this country. We probably won't send migrants back. We have dozens and dozens of NGOs who will fight the corner of migrants to make sure that they will not be sent back. So you can be guaranteed we will have the worst, we will get the worst of the pact, and we will get few, if any, of the benefits of the pact. That is the problem I have.
Michael McDougall made the point that if for example, the figure of 30,000 is correct, because that was the figure that we were told is the new normal, that means that you would have to, if you worked 7 days a week, you would have to deal with 82 applications per day. There is no possible way, when you take into consideration appeals, because most of them will appeal a process, and the majority of those 82 will be economic migrants. We know that from the figures that we've already seen. There is no possible way we are going to be able to deal with 82 applications per day. And that's leaving aside, you know, appeals, second appeals, whatever other complications come about in relation to that. We're just not going to be able to do it. It's just impossible. It's an impossible. We can't currently do it at the moment or anywhere close to it. So what makes us think we're going to do it any better?
And where are the majority of our applications coming from? They're coming from Britain. So the Supreme Court are preventing Ireland sending people back to Britain because of the Rwanda. As long as the British government have a process where they may send some of their asylum applications to Rwanda, you're not allowed to send back to Britain. 75 to 80%, AIM2 figures found out, and AIM2 research found out that 75 to 80% of applications into the IPAS office in Dublin come from Britain. So if we can send four-fifths of applications back, what is the benefit of this pact? Because let's be honest, there are very few direct flights from the parts of Europe where migrants cross the Mediterranean to Dublin. Mm-hmm. So they're not coming. They're not coming from.
They've already made applications in Britain or other EU countries before they came here, and most likely been rejected in other EU countries before they come here. Now, the only thing we could hope for is if a Labour government gets in Britain and Keir Starmer gets in, that he'll abandon the Rwanda plan, and that will then obviously then the Supreme Court will have to change the decision on that we can send them back to the UK as a safe country. But the problem is, you can send them back, but all they've got to do is get back on a plane again, go to Northern Ireland and come back through the border again, unless we have some sort of agreement with Northern Ireland whereby the ports are being checked in Northern Ireland and there's reception centres, you know, at, you know, Belfast City Airport or whatever, or Larne or whatever it happens to be.
Do you know what's decidedly absent from the conversation is any advice from the Attorney General? We saw during the family referendum how advice from the Attorney General was hidden. And it was only released by Grit Media. Grit Media found it afterwards. Have you heard any advice from the Attorney General on this? Nothing.
No.
We have brought a law. We have brought our government, our Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and the Green government and their TDs have brought in a law, and we have not heard any advice from the Attorney General. So are you trying to tell me that the Attorney General wasn't consulted on this? Why is there silence? Why is there nothing there? And once again, this comes back to like what happened in the family referendum. The Attorney General was hidden so that people wouldn't hear what the Attorney General said. It is very likely that the Attorney General highlighted a large number of potential problems and downsides to this pact. We are hearing nothing about it.
And as Michael McDougall said, and the former Minister for Justice, the former Attorney General and Minister for Justice, and a man who knows more about this than probably anybody else in the country, he said this is the most dangerous piece of legislation and the most dangerous part of Irish history. And he's probably right.
Exactly, he is right. And Niall, you went through a grueling 2 month European election campaign in the last while. In how many of the debates did this pact come up? Very, very rarely. And this is something that would fundamentally change this country.
Well, I was told by one of the other political parties that they regretted that I ran for Europe, and the main reason they regretted that I ran was because it forced them into having a conversation about immigration that they didn't plan to have.
Yep. And even the words we are using on the topic, they're trying to control the language we use.
Oh yeah.
When you read out the EU statement at the start there, they mentioned the irregular migration. Do you know what I mean? They wanted to try and downplay what this is. So
irregular is illegal. Yes.
Yeah. They don't want to use a certain word because certain words denote certain connotations. So they're trying everything they can to make this sound better than it is. And let's be honest, from my point of view, and I say this to someone who is, my mother is foreign, my mother is non-Irish, and I'm saying this, and this is nothing against, there are many, many decent people here have come to Ireland, but they've come legally. It's illegal migration is the problem is, and it really bothers me, and it really bothers AIM too, when they try to conflate legal migration and illegal migration. And what they try to do is they try and tar people to say that you're talking about people who come to work in hospitals or technology companies. No, we're not. What we're talking about is the lads across the border illegally from Northern Ireland, or the guys that jump on planes and turn up at Dublin Airport without any passports. These are the people that we need to focus this on. And it's something, as a country, that's very, very important. So we need to be very careful on this.
Well, I think, unfortunately, Eric, I think we're past that point. Now, listen, Eric Nelligan from AIM2, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Let me go to Stephen, if I can. Stephen, hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Niall.
Stephen, a lot of people are very disappointed today because this shouldn't have been voted for. It was rushed. There was no need to vote for it immediately, by the way. We could have waited a few more weeks, a couple of months. There was no rush on it because I think that's in it we can implement anyway. And it looks like I spoke this morning to TDs who are Fianna Fáil, and they didn't want to come on. And the reason they didn't want to come on is because they find it uncomfortable because they didn't want to vote for it.
Yeah, well, you know, I would have imagined that they were all whipped instead of allowing a free vote on it.
Of course.
You're right, we probably didn't need to start rushing headlong into this. But you're asking about positives. Well, one main positive I can think of that I said to your researcher as well is, like, the EU are going to have to start stumping up to help us improve our systems, which we should already have improved anyway. Let's not rehash that whole problem, you know. So they are going to have to work very closely with the new government whenever we have our election to make sure that the systems are in place and that they do what we're required to do. Because, and there's very few things I agree with AIM2 on, you know, we will get fined for it. And we have been fined and, you know, held accountable and, you know, have our feet over the coals for any number of UN treaties that we've signed and, you know, the rights for protection of people with disabilities and women and migrants and a lot of other different things you can think of. You know, we're constantly being scrutinized and held somewhat accountable for all of our failures in these things because the government are too, well, the current parties that we have are too inept to deal with it, and there aren't many in the Dáil that I think are capable of dealing with it.
Is it time the minister went? I mean, realistically, when you look at the track record of Helen McEntee right up to this point, now we're now in an irreversible situation where we now have to work with Europe on this, which a lot of people are not happy about because they believe we've lost part of our sovereignty.
Yeah, but we should have been working with Europe properly about it anyway for the last 20-odd years. You know, this whole idea of us losing sovereignty is not a big deal.
Ah, it is a big deal,
Stephen, isn't
it? It's
not as big as people think it is.
Well, it is a big deal. I mean, we signed up to the Lisbon Treaty.
What I'm going to say is, this does not only protect our borders, it protects the entire continent's borders.
Yeah, but when we signed up to the Lisbon Treaty, there were, you know, sections in that that suggested that we didn't have to sign up to everything. This was part
exactly.
of it.
We have plenty of opt-outs in it. And the government decided not to do that, but that's their own stupidity.
Well, that wasn't their stupidity. It was the MEPs that were over there. That was their stupidity. Like Denmark, we could have said no. We could have opted out of this. And see, the problem is, and my problem with it is, Stephen, is that everything that's in this, we could have done anyway. Do you know,
should have been doing anyway.
Well, should have been doing anyway.
I agree with you. I completely agree with you. We should have been doing a lot of this anyway. But for the same reason as we voted into it, we weren't doing a lot of it on our own anyway because we must be seen to be keeping in line with Europe. You know, and the only way, like, look how well that happened, that worked out for Britain when they decided to leave. Their entire system fell apart and is still falling apart.
But that's because they suffer from the same thing Ireland is suffering from. They have NGOs which are constantly taking cases back to the High Court.
And there are plenty of other groups and civil society groups and things like that that are arguing just as vehemently on the opposite side. So it's not NGOs' fault.
Well, it is, because they take advantage of a system. They're being paid by taxpayers, funded by taxpayers, and they're enabling the problem. They continue to enable the problem. I mean,
not all of them are directly funded by taxpayers. Some of them are partially funded by taxpayers, and the rest, and a lot of them are funded by donations from taxpayers because they agree with what they're trying to do. Just as much as they'll agree with the likes of AIM2 and people like that that are arguing on the opposite side. So it's not always the NGO's fault. And at the end of the day, the NGOs wouldn't be doing their jobs if the government was doing their job.
I mean, the parts of this pact that some people don't agree with, who would be on the left primarily, because there was even some of the NGOs who voted against this pact, or in the Oireachtas, who said they didn't agree with the pact, but for different reasons that maybe I wouldn't agree with it, right? Mm. And they said, you know, that it isn't humane, that the idea that you would be fingerprinting children, the idea that you would detain people who didn't have identification, for example, because part of the pact says that we will detain people in reception centres who don't have identification when we establish who they are. I mean, they didn't agree with that. But that's banana, Stephen, that you would have a border in a country and somebody would come in with no identification, we've no idea who they are, and you have groups of people who suggest that they shouldn't be detained, they should be free to just wander around Grafton Street. I mean, you can't have a situation like that.
Well, possibly, shockingly, I'm going to agree with you on that one. We should be holding on to everyone that comes into the country in safe, habitable, private, secure, whatever other adjectives you want to use, accommodation. We should have built those centres a decade ago, never mind 6 or 7 years ago, whenever we got the Catherine Day report. And we should be trying to get access to the systems that help us identify these people. And part of the pact is that it opens up the database to us. Because if they've been floating around Germany or Spain or Italy or Greece or somewhere like that, they'll have hopefully been documented somewhere. And we have access to that information now and in a much easier way of doing it. So...
But we're expected to do these applications in a short period of time that we're completely incapable of doing. And I don't care how much help we're going to get from Europe. We're not going to be able to process, for example, 82 applications per day, not including appeals, not including other complications. We can't do 2 or 3 a day as it speaks at the moment. So how are we possibly going to do 82 a day? It's just not going to happen.
We're not going to be able to do it, even in the 2 years that we have to prepare all of this. We have 2 years before we have to start actively working the pact. You know, we have 2 years to build up our systems and build up the ways we do things, you know. And you're right, it's not going to be amazing. It's not going to be perfect. We will be fine for the first couple of years for it because we just don't have the resources in place to be dealing with it. But again, that comes down to the fundamental willful neglect of the government for the last 20 years, do you know? So,
but the pact says we'll have an obligation to take
everything that the people on the right are saying.
The pact will dictate how many people we have to take every year based on a percentage of people who enter Europe, based on our GDP, based on our population.
And our population size, etc.
Okay. So when those numbers increase coming into Europe, and I predict they will increase, the numbers we will have to take will also increase. If we don't want to take them, then we have to pay a certain amount of money. And as AIM2 pointed out, and when do you ever sign up to a deal when you don't know how much it's going to cost you? Because the minister was asked how much it was going to cost. She'd no idea. I mean, why would you sign up to something when you've no idea what it's going to cost the taxpayer of this country? That doesn't make any sense.
No, and again, surprisingly, possibly, I'm going to partly agree with you on it because nobody's going to be able to predict what way the numbers are going to go except up because of all of the conflicts that are going on in the world at the moment, the 6 or 7 wars that are happening on the continent of Africa, plus all of the, as you say, economic migrants and people that are being affected by climate change and basically anything else you can possibly think of. The numbers are only ever going to go up. So all we can do is build up our resources that are able to deal with it.
Mm. I know the people that were affected by climate change was added to the criteria last year.
The way that the health service is going to cost what it's going to cost, and it is only ever going to go up.
Stay there for a second. Let me just go to, I think it's Carmel, is
that
it?
That money as opposed to how much you spend.
Okay, stay there for a second. Let me go to Carmel. Carmel, is it?
Yes, it is. Carmel.
Carmel, sorry, I do apologise. Yes. Carmel, I mean, look, we've signed up to it. It's done. You know, we all hate the idea of it, even the people who voted for it. So, but now we have to look at, is there any benefit to it? Because there's no point in us arguing as to whether we should sign up for it. We just have. It's irreversible. So is there any benefit, Carmel, to this?
No, I feel the only option to us now is to leave the EU. Eamon Ryan said in the Dáil some time ago that Ireland is an island that needs to start planning for a population of 10 million people taking in refugees at scale. I feel the population is going to explode. I think we have no option now but to start the motion to leave the EU. I do believe there's going to be a lot of changes now with the new governments coming into France, the change in Italy as well. And I do believe a motion is going to start.
Would it not be better, Carmel, rather than wanting to leave the EU? Because let's be clear about it. Look how successful that was for Britain. Britain left the EU because of migration. Let's be clear. Nigel Farage, of course, was the head of that. And they left, the whole, you know, emphasis of that was, to stop people coming into Britain illegally. It didn't stop it. It's done nothing. It's changed nothing. In fact, it's got worse. And Nigel Farage is back running for election again. So, in other words, it made no difference. So us leaving the EU is not going to stop this problem. And that will take years anyway. Would it not be better to try and fix the EU or change the EU? And as you rightly pointed out, there are new MEPs coming into Europe who would be more centrist or right-wing. So isn't that the hope then, that the EU changes rather than we...
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think also it has to be looked at the root problem in all of these countries. Why are these people being pushed out? I do believe there's a whole other agenda behind this. I do believe Soros' plan is just to absolutely ruin Europe. And I think there has got to be pushback. Yes, we absolutely do have to help genuine refugees, but they should only be allowed in under National Resettlement, so the United Nations Refugee Resettlement Program. These are genuine refugees. We have just human trafficking at the moment. These people are not genuine refugees. It needs to be stopped. The funding needs to be cut off from the NGOs. And quite frankly, these people, they need to be turned back. We just cannot have this continue. This population is going to explode in this country. And I think very soon we are going to start to see quantities of 100,000 per year. And as your previous caller said, as soon as there's a war declared somewhere, I do believe that we're going to be a very soft spot. If you look at the population of the UK right now, 67 million people, three times the size of Ireland, they are looking at us. They are thinking that we have the capacity to house more people. They don't care that we don't have the housing. They're going to flood us.
Well, there's between 700,000 and 1.2 million refugees currently seeking asylum in Britain. And many of those are going to want to go somewhere else now if the Rwanda plan continues and the Tories get back in again, or Nigel Farage maybe will get back in. That might help. Can I ask just Stephen a question on what you said there, Carmel? Stephen, when you start, you know, when you see this mass exodus of primarily young men or middle-aged men from, you know, villages all over Africa and places like that, it's not good for their economies. And that's not going to help the situation. What's going to happen is if we enable that and encourage that, and that's what we're doing currently at the moment, that problem is going to get worse. It's a domino effect. So you've got small little towns and villages all over Africa, you know, the Congo or wherever it happens to be, and they're emptying out of young men, young, hard-working men. And, you know, that's going to affect their economies, which in turn makes their economies worse, which in turn makes more people want to leave. So, you know, we shouldn't be encouraging that.
But when hundreds of thousands of hardworking young Irish men left this country and continue to leave, men and women leave this country every day, we think that that's not a bad thing, that it's good that we're spreading the diversity and, you know, these people are going to find a better life and returning money back into the economy.
But they do it through a proper process.
The majority of them. How many undocumented are in America? Mm-hmm. You know, the majority of them are trying to do it legally, and that should always be facilitated and should always be the correct way to go.
But look what happened back in, say, 2011, when a lot of people left Ireland for Australia.
Stop for people predicting that we're going to be flooded, that we're going to be, you know, inundated, that we're going to have people all over this country, that it's some grand master plan. to...
So do you think Carmel is an alarmist?
This country.
Do you think she's...
I think it's alarmist in the extreme, you know, to start sowing fear of anybody that doesn't look or sound like they're from, you know, this country.
But I don't see that, Stephen, because I think people like Carmel, for example, and I'll come back to Carmel in a second, let her answer for herself, but this idea that we conflate two different things, and the government do it all the time when we talk about EU Migration Pact or other things like that, or migration, and they say, oh, these people are against, look at all the wonderful people we have working in our hospitals, look at all our tech companies, look at the diversity around the country. Mm. There's nobody's against that. Everybody thinks that's great. Our economy would be nothing without it. But they seem to conflate the
and
two.
It's the same
and
then, point.
But that's not what Carmel is.
And other commentators are also saying that this population in this country needs to increase in order to, number one, have enough taxes coming in, excuse me, to pay for pensions and things of that. Never mind keeping the rest of the economy going and the systems, public systems going. And yet, at the same point, we don't want a lot of people coming into this country.
Okay, let me ask Carmel that question. Carmel, just in relation to the population of the country, and not in relation to what Simon Coveney and Eamon Ryan said many years ago about the 10 million people, but realistically, Irish people are not producing enough children. And I agree, by the way, our government should be encouraging the family and helping to promote people to have more children if that's what they want to do. But we're not encouraging people to have children. 1.7 children, or I think it's actually lower than that now, it's going down even more, which is below population replacement. If that continued without people coming into the country, Carmel, we will have a serious economic problem in the next generation.
So just to confirm, I am all for legal migration. I am so grateful to have all of the people come over, work in the healthcare, construction, hospitality. I have nothing against that. What I am concerned about is the level of illegal immigration into the country. People that we've absolutely no idea. They could have killed somebody. They could have raped somebody. You just don't know who these people are. And that terrifies me. It terrifies me when I meet them in the street, and I can tell because I pass some of the IPAS centres, so I see them going in and out. So I'm all for legal migration. I have travelled the world myself legally. I've worked in different countries. So I'm not against that. I'm not against the population growing, but I am against Ireland becoming a dumping ground for failed asylum seekers from the UK and all the quantities that the EU is now going to push into Ireland. That is where my concern is. And then just back to your comment about the Irish population not growing, they've done everything they can to stop that. The cost of living, the cost of housing, making abortion legal, giving out free contraceptives. They've done everything they can to stop the Irish native population from increasing. So now they're importing all this cheap labour into the country. I don't agree.
Okay, we'll stay there for a second. Let me go to Madeline. Madeline, hi, how are you?
Hello, Niall. Haven't talked to you since the elections. Absolutely. Yeah, gutted, feeling very deflated.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, thank you for your help one day. I know you were at Northside Shopping Centre with us one day and gave us a little bit of a handout, handing out leaflets. You were very good and I really appreciated all the help we got from everybody.
I absolutely enjoyed it. But anyway, I suppose that's for another day, how the elections went the way they went, since everybody that I knew wasn't voting for the parties yet. They still walked in, but sure, that's for another day. The caller there before, the lady, Carmel, about bringing in people and people going out. We're exporting all our talented, skilled, educated people from this country because they can't afford to live here. And we're importing all the unskilled people who will never work here, who will just get into the system. Everything that's happening in the country is just completely wrong. Rushing through these decisions, totally wrong. Not giving the people a voice. I mean, we're only short of thrown us back into the lion's den now for speaking the truth. We're only once removed now from that because authorities back in the Roman Empire, if you didn't agree with them, that's what happened to you. You were slaughtered, you were thrown into the lions, and we are heading back there with all this shit going through. The country will not be able to operate these systems that they're talking about when if this pact comes in, because...
Well, if the pact comes in. The pact is in.
Oh, when it comes, okay. Because the country has been run down the toilet for the last few years because there are no systems working. You only have to look at the housing, the hospitals, the schools, our infrastructure. Nothing has changed. So what we're doing is we're going to just hand over our country, our sovereignty, our ruling to those in Europe, because there will be nobody capable. Well, so far, none of the politicians now that are in government would be capable of running a street, let alone a country.
I mean, but did we ever, I mean, when you think back in history of Ireland, were we ever really independent? Because we were ruled by the British. Then when the British kind of left us to our own devices, the Catholic Church kind of took over and they ran us. Then the European Union came along, and of course, during the crash, the Troika took over. They took over our budget. We couldn't even control our own budgets. It's only recently we got back, and then NEFA took over the country for a while. We've never really had it to ourselves. And the 4 years that we've had it to ourselves, the last 3 or 4 years, we've made a hames of it.
Slowly but surely, we have been handing things away. And don't forget, over the last 2 years, while all these plans were all being worked out, we were all told we had to wear masks. The masks weren't just for this whole scamdemic thing. The masks shook people up while all this shit was all being prepared to come in here. And there was only a handful of us actually seeing what was happening. This plan that's going through for them in Europe to be running at the whole of Europe, and that they don't want any independent rulers.
Before I come to John, Stephen, listen to Carmel and Madeline. They see in their eyes, and many people see this, and it's easy to write people off as conspiracy theorists, right? But they see a bigger picture here, a bigger plan. You don't see that, do you, Stephen? You think that's kind of conspiracy theory world.
Well, I see a big picture. I do see the big picture, and I do see some of the concerns that they're raising, but I don't see them from the same sources that they are seeing them from, because, you know, we're not talking about population replacement. We're not talking about some grand master plan. We're talking about making this country work the best it can for everybody within this country. That's all NGOs and governments and things like that have been trying to do since the foundation of the state.
So when did NGOs want it better for everybody? I mean, look, the National Women's Council of Ireland wanted to remove the word woman, mother and family from the Constitution of Ireland. I mean, that was a huge mistake by an NGO, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I didn't say they were getting it right. I'm just saying that this is the reason they create themselves, is to try and advocate as best they can for a particular section of society, or, you know, society as a whole.
Do we not live in a democracy? I mean, there is, you know, a part of the Constitution there that states that a big decision like this, which is, you know, life-changing and it is historical. I mean, the idea that we hand over another part of our sovereignty to the European Union and allow them to control our borders should have been and could have been put to the people under Article 27 of the Constitution. Mm. And it wasn't.
But all of these laws and all of this stuff that's going to be in the pact and things like that is up to us to implement in whatever way we are able to do it. The same with the Nature Restoration Act and things like that. It is up to us to implement it in as best a way as we possibly can, relevant to the country.
But we still have to do it under the guidelines of the EU.
It's up to us to do it.
Yeah, but hang on. But it's still a set of rules that we have to adhere to, you know, under the guidelines of the EU. And if we don't, we get fined.
Is there anything in it that the people on the right and the other callers are going to say that we shouldn't have already been doing, or that we shouldn't start doing right now?
Well, first of all, there's another very important point here, that it's illegal to come into a country without a passport or documentation. Yes, that has been happening for the last few years. And if you were reading in a book that people were invited into a country and then have to live on the roadside in tents, then town had to be blocked off from the indigenous people that couldn't even walk in their own city because the government has to block parts of the country off from our own people to protect the people that they're bringing in to live in tents. If you were reading this in a book, you wouldn't.
But again, you're not
it.
Answering my question.
Okay, okay. Well, your question is there anything in the pact that we shouldn't be doing anyway? And I'll ask Madeline that question, and I'm not too sure over how familiar Madeline is with everything that's in the pact. But I mean, you're probably right. There isn't anything in it that we shouldn't be doing anything anyway, apart from handing the EU money for people we don't want to take. That's the part I have a huge problem with. But in saying that. Mm-hmm. You are right. We should be doing this anyway. But isn't that the whole point, Stephen? Why have we signed up to the European Union to tell us what to do and how to protect our borders and to control that? And if we don't do it the way they want us to do it, we get a fine. When we should be doing all of that anyway.
Anyway.
Because we're clearly incapable as a state of actually doing it ourselves.
But that's not an answer. That's really not an answer. We should be capable. You know, we have a government we pay good money to, and they're on good salaries, and we have a Minister for Justice who's completely incompetent.
It's not about how much we spend, it's how we spend it. and where we spend it and what we do with it. It's never about how much we spend. Nobody, well, I was going to say nobody cries about the amount of money we're spending in the health service. A lot of people cry about the money we're spending in the health service, but at the same point, it's being spent ineffectually from my point of view and a lot of other people's points of view, I'm sure. But this pact means that we are part of the bigger system that is able to manage this on a continental level.
Stay there. Well, hang on. Stay there for a second, please, and save me Madeline too. Let me go to John, who hasn't been on before, but I am after leaving and waiting for 15 or 20 minutes there, so I do apologise. John, hi, how are you?
How are you doing, man? How's things?
Good. John, I mean, the EU Migration Pact, there's no point arguing whether we should or shouldn't. We're already in. It's voted for. Done last night by a bunch of weasels. So, I mean, is there any benefit to it at all, as far as you can see?
I mean, not really. Like, look, just to be clear, Noel, like, I work in a multinational company with lots of foreign nationals. My girlfriend's a non-Irish, so I don't have any problem with anyone coming. But people need to contribute to the society, and that goes for Irish people as well as people coming in. I just want to point what Stephen said about illegal Irish people in the US. They have no rights there. They have to pay tax. If you're pregnant and you're illegal in the US, they don't even let you go to the hospital to have a baby, so it's not the same thing. So you're comparing apples with oranges by trying to say, well, there's illegal Irish people in other countries, because I can tell you now, they don't get the rights that someone here would get when they come in the country.
Mm. And the Irish have always worked. I mean, you don't go illegally to the United States and, you know, claim social welfare or claim 800 quid a month for your accommodation or look for the government to give you somewhere, you know, to live. You know, that's just not going to happen. They wouldn't even give you a tent. No, you wouldn't even get. And if you did try to pitch a tent in the middle of Manhattan somewhere, it wouldn't be long before you'd be sent home. So, Stephen, it is like comparing apples to oranges. You know what I mean?
I know, but the general overtone of my point was that there has always been people going to countries illegally. And
oh, I know that.
You either let them sit in their own shit on the side of the street or in a tent by a canal or outside Man Street or outside a government office, or you do the humane thing and you house them and treat them properly.
But look, people have been coming to Ireland illegally for the last 50 years, right? But those people who came to Ireland illegally for the last 50 years, and many of them are still here, they're undocumented in Ireland, they're working and they're contributing. In other words, yeah. So they're not living in tents.
If they either have the chance themselves or make the chance themselves or are given the chance by the country and its systems, then they can be productive members of society, which we all want.
But Stephen, is that not the problem? There's a lot of underlying issues with systems in Ireland, like between the welfare. And
I've said that 100,000 times, and I will continue saying it 100,000 times. The systems don't work.
We can't even run our own state companies like Aer Lingus. We sold ourselves to Vodafone.
Semi-state company.
And they all made profits. They all made profits the minute they were sold. But when they were running by the state, we were losing money, so clearly we don't run anything properly. That's clear. I mean, the thing about...
Oh, yeah, listen, I could go off on a mass left socialist rant about how we should nationalise everything again, but let's not do that, shall we?
I don't think that's the answer either. I'm merely saying, why
don't think
we have
so either, but
why can we have something like Bord Gáis, for example, and not make a profit, and a private company takes it over and does? So there's fundamentally something wrong.
Well, I
think your answer there, John, is when you have a civil servants working in a company, it's like anything. You know, when you privatise something that's already been run by civil servants, you will find it's a lot more efficient. And I think we all know the reason why. You've got overpaid people not doing enough work. Okay, but because they're not working in the private sector. So there's a big difference in the private sector and the public sector when it comes to efficiency.
And they're not answerable, Noel.
If
we do a bad job, if you do a bad job and your rate is dropped, Noel, you're gone from the radio. You're not that's it, you know, that's how it works.
Yeah, but if I do a bad job in RTE, I'm not gone.
Yeah, you're there for, you probably get a raise.
Yeah, or a pension.
And also at the moment, that chap is saying about, you know, putting trust in this system and this system working. These same people have been in government for years and nothing has worked. Has nobody stopped and looked at the amount of people we're losing out of this country because they can't afford to buy a house, because they can't get their child into a school? Why are we not cleaning house here first and looking after a country, which I would have thought was the responsibility of our Irish government?
Yeah. Well, just to say, the governments do pass comment and do wring their hands and cry to the sky about all of the people leaving the country and how terrible it is. But you're right, they're not doing as much as they possibly could to stop a lot of this happening, because it's not exactly in their interests.
the new house Stephen, has been built here in Coolock, and the price of this was supposed to be affordable housing, $500,000 for a three-bedroom house.
Oh yeah, I saw that article.
My own granddaughter's school, they're mixing first, second and third class together where they can't get teachers because the teachers from the country have to go home because they can't afford to rent in Dublin. Now why, as a government, are they not looking at this? Our children have a right to an education. Our people have a right to a bed in a hospital. Mm-hmm. Why are we worrying about bringing in hundreds of thousands of people when we can't look after our own? Why is this not prominent in politicians' heads? This is the only way this country will work, to look after the people who actually live here.
And if you look at the Red Sea polls, or was it Ipsos polls, should I say, over the weekend, which were taken 2 weeks ago, which would have been just before the last elections, we can see that immigration, Stephen, is still the number one issue, according to the polls. And after that, it comes to housing, and they're all very loosely connected as well. We've received over 2,000 messages, got a note here, we received over 2,000 WhatsApp messages today that are all in disbelief of what they voted for last night. Stephen, you know, the very fact that all of these people, including Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael ministers, or TDs last night, voted with the whip, as you rightly said, and voted for this. And even then, it was 79 to 72, whatever it was. Yeah. It was barely got over the edge. They know, they absolutely know this should have been put to the people. So why are they ignoring the will of the people when the majority of people, including some of the lefty NGOs, said, this is not a good idea. We don't need this. Why are they not, what? Can somebody help me figure out why they are not listening to the people anymore?
Because it's not going to matter once the election happens. I'm sure Mary Lou McDonald is sitting on the opposition bench kind of going, oh, we better actually do something about this.
And we will Sinn Féin are pretending they're against it. Yeah, sorry, John.
The guys at this topping up pensions and extra tax, like the reality is these people are going to go into a welfare trap. When we look at the people that were called the far right that were messed up the city centre, they're all the people that don't work. When we look at the people who are attracted into the country, we're getting the same because people are coming for an attractive, they want a free house, they want all this stuff. And who's going to pay for all this stuff? Because we're just, we already have a massive problem.
And who's getting the free houses? It's not them and it's not Irish people either.
Well, can I just correct something the last caller said about far right not working?
Yeah,
that's the wrong statement. People are being
I'm saying that's what was portrayed. But I'm saying the people that were actually going in and smashing up the city centre were people that don't work, and we're probably going to attract like-minded people coming in to get
lefty
plants
because
we don't know who they are. Whoever the people were that smashed up the city centre or did all that kind of damage and that violence in the city back in November, they were just scumbags. They're not protesters or any description. They're just scumbags.
The majority of the people who have been protesting against this for years are hard working, decent Irish people.
Stay there a second. Let me just go to Jason. Jason, hi, how are you?
Good afternoon, Noel. How are you, pal?
Good, Jason. Jason, I mean, look, it's voted for. Is there any benefit to it at all?
The way it is now, no. No. Because we've no control over who comes in. See, Noel, we're not attached to Europe. We're not attached to that big mainland. We're a little rock. So if you put 100,000, 200,000 burden men onto this country, it's going to make a difference. It's going to stand out. Where in the main part of Europe, they can disappear through Europe, they can absorb into because it's a massive, massive place. And the reason the government voted it through is they know they'll never be voted out. I've told you this for many years now. They have such a system that it's one or the other. We have a two-part and that's it. You have your Sinn Féins all you want. People see them for what they are. And I was a massive Sinn Féin supporter for years, the last 20 years. But what I've seen out of Sinn Féin is nothing more than disgraceful.
It's populist politics, isn't it?
Oh, Noel, at the highest. I mean, to stand at Wolfetown's graves at the weekend and make this big speech how they were the party for Ireland and all, and then you see what they're really doing and they're going around. They're trying to destroy this country. The reason we're not having kids is because we spent the last 20 years telling women they don't need men and they don't need fathers in their lives and they go off and have these great big careers and pay all these taxes. And when you do have a child, you just stick it into that crèche over there. Don't worry about it. The child is just an accessory nowadays, you know, that way.
Well, I suppose the whole idea of that was giving all people more freedom to make their own decisions around how their family is constructed. But I do get the point that you made. I get the point that you made.
Yeah, yeah. And I've asked you this as well, and I'm hoping somebody can answer me this. If 80% of our laws now are now come up from Europe, why do we need such a big doll?
we still have to vote on all those directives when they do come to Ireland in the Dáil 4 years later. I get the point you're making.
Noel, Europe tell us what we're doing, and them gobshites up there just tell us. They'll stand there and have that little debate and all, but at the end of the day, they knew this was passing. They've been implementing this as according to the McAtee. They've been implementing some of this already, so they knew this was passing. This was all just a showboat. This is a race to the bottom. For everybody that's not, say, let's go college educated, that's not in these blue collar jobs. So everybody in the construction, the transport, the food industry, farm and labour and all of that, yeah? We've been trying for years to get our wages up so we can live somewhat of a decent life. Now they're going to bring in people that will do my same job for half my money because they live in this truck for all week. They'll have no family, no house, no nothing. So why would a lad now employ me on, say, 800 quid a week, right, just for argument's sake? I have to run a house, I have to run a family, I have to pay me taxes, pay on me, blah, blah, blah. But he can stick a fella, and it's been happening for years in this industry, Niall. They're sticking fellas in these jokes, they're living in them 7 days a week, okay, on half the money I'm on. Why is that fair?
Well, we do see that when you see mass immigration or you see illegal immigration into a country, of course, it does have a huge effect on wages because people will do jobs cheaper. And we've seen that. Well, actually, I was talking to somebody last night about California. And in California, when Mexicans came in first, it was a huge problem because they did all the cheap labour and they put a lot of people out of work in construction. But when the next generation came along, and isn't this the hope that when the next generation come along, that they then, you know, get a good education, get good jobs?
I heard that, Niall. They all end up doctors and lawyers. No, they don't. Not all of them. A few of them do, but not all of them, Niall. And Niall, another thing, people keep saying you can't blame them on the housing crisis. This, that. No, they didn't create the housing crisis. But when you have 20 houses and 40 people looking for them 20 houses, and then you bring another 60 people in, right? What happens to the price of that house? Goes through the roof because everybody's fighting for it. So it does have a knock-on effect.
Of course it does.
They're not all going to stay in hotels and tents and in iPad centres. Eventually, they're going to be just pushed out. As you said, they're just going to be pushed onto social welfare.
Well, that's all we're doing. Even in the Ukrainian situation at the moment, where you drop the money and tell them they've only got accommodation for 90 days, they don't really only have accommodation for 90 days. That's actually a lie. All we're doing is moving the problem from the Department of Integration to the Department of Housing or Social Protection.
Thanks.
Hang on, I want to go to Steve as well. Steve, hi, how are you?
Well, how are you, Niall?
As opposed to Stephen.
Yeah, so I agree with Stephen on a lot of this. But I want to ask you, Niall, what is the downside of what is in this EU migration pact now?
Okay.
What's the downside?
Okay. Let me tell you, okay, I agree with a lot of what's in it. You're going to be surprised to hear me saying that. But the downside is I don't want Europe controlling it, because what's in that we can do ourselves. We can do right now.
Okay, so...
So there's no... The point I'm making is, why would you give control over legislation, Irish legislation, to the EU when we can already do that anyway, most of it anyway? That's the downside.
Okay, because what's happening here is, Niall, this is going to ensure that the legislation is adhered to. Because
we should be doing that anyway.
Hold on. Yes, of course we should. But I wouldn't put them in charge of a sweet shop. They're useless fuckers. You know that, and I know that. So what's going to happen here is there will be pressure applied from the EU to the Irish government to actually carry out and keep to their promises.
No.
So, I mean,
of course it will. But what makes you think for 1 minute, if we're incapable of, say, looking after 82 applications per day, which is probably what the demand is going to be, it could be, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know yet, because even our own Minister for Justice has no idea what the figures is. She's no idea how much it's going to cost. I mean, it's like incompetence at its best. Anyway, but look, if we're incapable of doing that now, when this is implemented in about a year and a half or 2 years, what makes you think we're going to be able to do it then?
Because the Irish government cowtails to everything the EU says. You agree?
No, I don't.
Yes, they do. No, they do.
I still don't think they're going to be able to do it. It's impossible.
You know they bend over backwards for them. And what they're going to do is the Irish government are going to say, oh, well, the EU said we have to do this, so we're going to have to do it. We're going to have to do it.
But here's the thing. If we had control over our own legislation, which we don't anymore, now it's gone since last night, but if we had control at a point where we say, right, we can't do this. This is an impossibility. We can't take those kind of numbers. We're going to have to reduce the numbers. We could make our own mind up, change our own laws. We can do whatever we want. But now that we've signed over to the EU, we now can't. We now are they are in control of the rules.
Decisions will be made within the EU Parliament, how many people that we can take in. And obviously the Irish people get a say in that. Well, when
no, they don't.
Those are the arseholes, are representatives who are voted in. They're going to be the ones saying, look, lads, we only have room for another 5,000.
But they're not going to say that, because you've just sent over Eoin O'Riordan, Regina Doherty, Barry Andrews and Lynn Boylan, who are all pro-immigration. So they're not going to say that.
And you also have people in the EU Parliament who don't represent Ireland, but who have stood up for Ireland in the past because they're more right-wing leaning. And also,
they'll be standing up for their own country. It's not our country.
There's tons of stuff within this that is going to help Ireland. I mean, processing them faster. We're not doing that now, and we should be doing that. We should be getting rid of them out of this country as soon as possible. If they shouldn't be here, get them out.
But that's not going to happen. And it's not going to happen with the EU Migration Pact either. It just isn't going to happen.
That's what the Migration Pact ensures these things.
Oh, you think so? So you think that if we hand over a certain amount of money to Europe and we say, listen, we can't take 30,000, we're only going to take 15,000, we don't have the accommodation or reception for them, so I'll tell you what, we'll pay you 25 grand for each one of them annually. Is that fair to the Irish taxpayer?
That's a downside. That's a downside that I don't agree with. It's a downside, a part of it that I don't agree with. Most of all, I do agree with. But now, see, what's happening here is when the government actually do have some sort of a clever idea, you guys are all so stupid and blinded
What's clever about giving away your own your legislation to Europe, giving away your sovereignty and control? What's clever about that?
We already give all that away in any way.
We don't.
In every aspect.
We don't.
Yes, we do.
No, we retain a lot of laws like neutrality, for example. We retain a lot of stuff that we're entitled to retain.
You said to yourself during your campaign that EU legislates on most things in Ireland.
Yeah.
So therefore, you know, this is just another goddamn thing that they're controlling. And hopefully they will do a better job than the bunch of arseholes that are already in charge.
Stephen, is that your take on it?
Me? Well, you know, as I said, the next government and whoever else is going to be in power to actually put this all into effect is going to have to work very closely with our European counterparts and our MEPs and the civil service in order to actually make this work in a way that is workable for the country. There will always be negotiations as to how and what we do with the legislation that we have to enact here. There are always going to be negotiations. That is, we may not have to pay for the first couple hundred thousand people that we can't take, which is not going to happen anyway in the next 10 years, because this is the way it always works. It's the same, as I said, with the Nature Restoration Pact, that all of this has to be negotiated and made workable in each individual country. It is up to us how we figure it out and how we implement it. And I pray to any other power in the second universe that the next government actually makes it work. Because otherwise the system keeps going on and going on, and we get more people like the other callers on this show that will keep giving out about it and keep demanding that we leave Europe and keep saying that the system is fucked and the country is fucked. And
it is in a lot of ways. But you mean, you are right. What this does is it distances people from Europe, and it basically makes a lot of people feel we're better off without the EU. And, you know, in many ways we could be, in many ways we wouldn't be. So there is a balance to be had there. And that's why we need good MEPs over in Europe. Unfortunately, we didn't get that this time around. Maybe in 5 years we will. Let me go. Stay there, Steve, for a second. Let me go to John. I don't think Steve fully understands the pact, mind you. Sorry, John, go ahead.
Excuse me?
No, it's okay. John, hi, how are you?
I'm not too bad. I'd say, without correction, that I'd say the bulk of messages you're getting in today, whatever...
are disappointed. Very disappointed.
Yeah, completely against this, I'd say. This should have been put to the people as a referendum, right? We're a small little nation. You can see the way we've been penalised. We've been threatened and bullied now that if we don't take a certain amount, nobody knows what number will be. If they say that we'll have to take 100,000, we'll have to take 100,000.
Well, they're not going to say that.
Yeah, no, but if we say we can't take the 100,000, they say, well, grand, you'll take, we say, 60,000, and then you'll have to pay penalties for the remaining that you can't take. This is nothing short of treason. This is not what we fought to get our independence for and shed blood in every highway and byway in this country. But to be sold out, the people not consulted, a bunch of traitors up there in Dalian who are letting the people down on a daily basis, sitting in trolleys and chairs inside the A&Es. At the moment, there's a child once a week coming up, a 13-year-old little girl, and she's protesting outside of the Dáil. And she will continue to do so because she suffers from autism, right? And then she gets the service that this state should be already supplying for her. That child has to come up once a week and do that. Yet there's people pouring into the country and they're getting every handout is given to them while that child has to protest outside our national parliament. Now, isn't there something wrong in the country when that's the way?
So,
it's not got to do with the migration pact.
No, it's not. No,
listen, you absolute dumbass. Of course it does. If you're neglecting a sovereign Irish 13-year-old child who needs help and you're bending your hole up in the air to look after every Tom, Dick, and asshole that comes in here before her, you haven't the fucking clue what you're talking about.
Okay, well, you first of all want to calm down and stop calling names, you gobshite. Because
listen,
what I said
know,
is, I'm not going to listen to your abuse.
I'm not taking this off. Hold on for a second, John. Fucking 1 minute you're in, the next minute you're on. 1 minute you're gay, the next minute you're fucking sick. You don't know your ass.
You mind your own fucking business, you ignorant prick.
Can you both calm down? Steve, he said this should have been put to the people in a referendum, that this is not democracy. You know, it should have been. Everybody and their mother knew that. Everybody had been calling for it. It could have been legally put to the people. Why wasn't it, Steve?
Well, hold on 2 seconds, Lyle. For once in your goddamn career, you know, I didn't start any of what just happened there. So why don't you chastise the guy who just came on air
John, you shut up for a second, will you please? Just for a second. And let him answer the question.
So ask me the question, please.
The question was, why, John is talking about democracy. Why wasn't it put to the people? The people of this country had a right to vote on something that Michael McDougall, who was the former Attorney General and Minister of Justice, said it himself, it should be put to the people.
Yeah, it should have been put to an ordinary referendum. Yes, of course it should. But all I said there, Niall, I asked... All I asked was one question, which was, what has that got to do with the migration pact? And then I got the mouthful of abuse. So I'll ask the question again. What has the migration pact got to do with a sick kid?
John, what's the migration pact got to do with a sick kid is the point he's asking.
It's got everything to do with it.
Do you want to explain it then? Do you want to try and explain it? Because I do understand the point he's making. Because, John, whether we have the EU migration pact or not, the government is failing miserably and has been failing miserably for the last, you know, 3 decades to deal with the healthcare problem.
The reason we had all these protests right around the country is because people see the services weren't there for our own. It's not that they were racist or far right. And if this other idiot can't see that, they're talking
But John, with the greatest respect, it didn't matter whether there's 100,000 people come into the country in the last year or not. That poor, unfortunate child would have still been in the position she was in because we've got a bad health service that's been run badly.
No, but the point I'm making is they can do it for others and they can't do it for their own. It's been said numerous times on the show.
Well, are you telling me there's an immigrant child come into this country with exactly the same problem and was dealt with immediately? I don't think so.
They're on the canals, for Christ's sake. There's immigrants along the canals. Now, John, don't get me wrong. I am on your side, and this is the bit why I can't understand why you're so angry. I'm on your side when it comes to illegal migrants coming into this country. Get them out. Ship them out as soon as possible. Hence the reason why I support this pact, because our government are a shower of goddamn wasters who can't do what they're asked to do. But hopefully this will ensure that people who do come in illegally will be processed ASAP and told to get the hell out.
But I mean, but you see, the problem is, like, I mean, how can you have confidence in a government that hasn't done it up to now, that has an open door policy, right? Nobody knows how many people are in the country, and just because we've signed up to this thing now doesn't mean they're still going to get it right. The only reason is we're going to be dictated over Europe.
That's my entire point, John. I don't have confidence in this government. What I have a bit more confidence is Europe putting their foot down and saying, lads, get your bleeding act together, you know, stick to the rules and the pact, and then maybe we'll get somewhere.
Let me give you an analogy. There's a guy and he's running a popular corner shop. It's a busy one. We've got a turnover of 5 or 6 million. And it's not doing really well. So he says, okay, I'll get the CEO at Tesco's to run it for me. And then the owner comes in and he goes, what's the story? And he goes, ah, it just wasn't going too well. We weren't turning a profit. So I have the CEO at Tesco's running it now. So everything's grand. And he goes, but why did you do that to my shop? And he says, oh, because it's better. Well, at least now we know it'll make a profit. But it's my shop and you're letting the CEO at Tesco's run it. And he goes, yeah, but at least we know we'll make a profit. But you should have been making a profit anyway, or I should have put you out of a job. That's the point, isn't it, Steve? Why are we letting the EU take control of our legislation, our most important legislation, which is control of our borders, which we signed when we signed up to the Lisbon Treaty? We allowed ourselves to keep that to ourselves, just like Denmark did. We could have opted out of that. So why are we letting the EU do that? Why do we vote for because we're making a bollocks of it.
No, Niall, because we're allowing them to do it. It's not even a case of allowing them to do it. I would rather the EU control this than the idiots that we have.
I would rather we didn't have idiots.
I'd be perfect. Niall. That would be the great solution. But we have idiots. So what are we going to do?
Niall.
Yes, John.
Yeah, look, there's a big comment I was there, like you mean, and a big upheaval as regards the North of Ireland and about should we have a border, should we not have a border? Like at the moment, right? I mean, it's recognised that there is a psychological border, I suppose you could say, but I mean, there's not a physical border being manned on the place now, right? And everyone is aspiring to United Ireland. But while all that's going on, worrying about uniting the country, then we're giving away sovereignty at the other end of it.
Absolutely. Well, stay there for a second because I want to go to, I have to go to Morris first, then I'm going to come to Dave. Stay there, please, Steve, if you can. Let me go to Morris. Morris, hi, how are you?
How you doing, Niall? Last afternoon, great.
Oh, don't
great
piss Steve off. He's not having a good day. Don't piss Steve off. He's not having a good day.
We all have bad days, and we're glad to be alive that you can have a good day and a bad day. I think that pact that was passed really was at the fingers to the Irish public, to the ordinary working man, woman and children in this country. The government went ahead, they went behind their backs and said, you know what, we're going to implement stuff here that you have no control over. You'll have nothing to do with. We'll still get our high salary. And whatever situation erupts, we can point the finger at Europe. And I think Europe should really embarrass the Irish government. Do you know why? Because they should turn around to them and say, you guys are not being allowed to sign up to any pact about immigration because you have 14,000 of your own people in emergency accommodation, i.e. potentially homeless. So you can't even look after your own Irish homegrown, born people. And now you're coming onto this pact looking for money to help people coming in from various different places around the world. What a shameful thing to have to say.
But you've been listening to Steve's defeatist attitude, which is starting to really irritate me.
And no, it's not defeatist.
It is a defeatist attitude. Idea is, you know, that we're incapable of doing it, Morris. So sure, look, isn't anything better than our own government?
I said the government.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm talking about. Our government, we are incapable as a country of looking after this problem. So let's just let the EU, the big boys in the EU, look after it. After all, sure, it couldn't be much worse. That's the attitude of Steve. And that's the attitude of some people in this country, which is the wrong attitude, if you ask me.
Yeah, there's no point in rolling over and saying, oh, look, they can't do it. Let the other clowns do it. But one of the things, Niall, that was said at the very start of this subject, somebody said on two, why did we sign up to something that we don't know what it's going to cost, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah?
We've no idea what it's going to cost.
We already did that. We already did that once already. The National Children's Hospital, $2.4 billion now. And I read a report at the weekend. They brought in a consultant paediatrician. Showed him around the facility and said, what do you think? The guy cried his eyes out. They fucked up the inside of that hospital no end. It's going to cost thousands to get it right. Imagine a top guy coming in to look at a state-of-the-art hospital and he goes away crying because they made such a horrible...
You would imagine he would have been brought into the planning stage, wouldn't you, rather than to wait till half it's built.
Yeah, you're talking. There you go.
Okay, well, look, that's the point I'm making. And the point Steve is making badly is we're incapable of doing anything right.
My argument to Steve, let me finish,
the defeatist attitude is say, well, we're incapable of doing it, so let's get somebody else to look after it, rather than kicking out the people.
Attitude.
But rather than us standing up, taking to the streets in a proper and peaceful protest and saying, we demand new people running this country.
Will you stop being so ridiculous? Before this pact came into play, did the Irish people have any say in migration? The answer is no. Who had the say? The current power that's in government. So the current power that's in government are making poxy decisions, terrible decisions. So I would rather give it to somebody else than the ones who are already making the bad decisions. That's not the fetus.
It is the fetus.
To ask the Irish people to get out on the streets and protest, my bollocks, Niall, I'll say to that, because look what they did during the EU, well, the when you ran as a candidate. You know, they voted in the same wankers again. So I have no faith left in the Irish people.
Yeah, sorry, Morris.
The reason why we have no control over the immigration, it's all illegal. You know, it's illegal immigration. Why would you not be suspicious of somebody that's coming into your country that deliberately destroys their identification and the passport to get beneficial benefits here? I saw one bunch of guys in the tents, right? And the NGOs moved them down to Fitzwilliam Square, Merrion Square, because there was a Taste of Ireland field regalia going on, right? Regatta. First tent, the guy rolls up. The hell yes, lads, where are you from? They're rolling the joint of cannabis.
Mm-hmm. But you know, the Migration Pact addresses that.
Rolling joints of cannabis?
No, it addresses the people who are coming in burning their passports, Noel, and getting rid of them.
Can I say something to you in relation to that? Nothing is going to change, and I'll tell you why. Let me just read something here if I can find it, okay? So it talks about the qualification regulation replaces the qualification directive, and it talks about irregular entry. Now, see, here's the problem, Steve, right? So the EU describe illegal immigrants as irregular immigrants. They won't even use the word illegal because this is that we're pandering to this kind of fancy NGO lefty language. And we will never, and the EU will never sort this out if we pander to that stupid language. You're either legal or illegal.
Niall, can I ask you a question? Just genuinely, just calm down for 2 seconds and listen to this.
Yeah.
If I was to say to you on air right now, feck off, Niall, or if I was to say to you, fuck off, Niall, both means the exact same thing. Just mincing language doesn't change the situation.
No, it does.
Intention.
It does change it because you see what happened when I was in for the EU debates there during the election. I was on RTE. Cormac, who is the Drive Time presenter, even he on RTE wouldn't let me use the word illegal immigration. And he said to me, there is no such thing as illegal immigration. So what happens is, what happens is, when you don't use that language, they genuinely believe it doesn't exist. And that's the problem.
Wrong. Use a different word.
I'm not going to use a different word. Why?
Pick your battles. Be clever about it.
Why would I use a different word? It's illegal. The guards prosecuted people for it. It's illegal. It's on the Irish statute books. It's illegal.
They're doing this very same thing that you're doing to me right now, which is shouting me down, Niall, and telling me that I shouldn't be saying X, Y, and Z. So what you should do in that situation is try and do what I'm doing, is be a little bit smarter about it. Accommodate them a little bit so you can get your point across. Otherwise, your voice will be just completely lost.
But isn't that the problem, Steve? Isn't that the problem? When you start accommodating people by changing your language to suit their narrative, you're giving in to them, and then the truth, and then the truth never comes really out, does it?
Absolutely, yeah. It's not a fair fight, Niall. But you have to be smarter than that. You have to be a hell of a lot smarter.
Stay there. Let me go to Dave. Dave, hi. How are you?
What's crack?
Dave, should we be changing our language to suit the EU?
this irregular entry thing. This isn't a new term. This has been used for quite a while. It's just a phrase that's used to differentiate between, you know, someone who's trying to come here, say, as
an economic
migrant and as someone who comes in as a genuine asylum seeker or refugee. So, like, it's not that they're saying we don't use the phrase. It's just a different terminology that's used by the powers that be to differentiate between different groups of people who try to come into Europe. Mm. You know, it's not that some big lefty campaign was, you know, launched to, you know, get rid of the phrase illegal immigration. I mean, it's still used all over Europe. And, like, to be fair, this isn't necessarily a left versus right thing, because there are right-wing parties across Europe that actually support this pact, you know? So it's, you can't really boil it down to politics.
Do you support it, by the way? Well, when I say do you support it, I don't know. It doesn't matter whether you do or not. It's voted in now. Do you believe we can benefit in any shape or form from it?
honestly, I'm kind of on the fence about it, to be honest, because like, on the one hand, yes, immigration should be a sovereign right of every nation in Europe. That's fair enough. But there are things that we share. We have common travel. We have the single market. We have freedom of movement all around Europe, to, you know, so long as you're a part of European member state, you know, so we don't complain about that. But at the same time, this isn't just an Irish issue or a Swedish or a Danish or an Italian. I mean, the Italians are under a lot more pressure than we are. This is a Europe-wide issue. And having, like, one set of rules that are, you know, like, clear-cut on how you deal with this situation doesn't necessarily seem like the worst idea in the world to me. I mean, the fact that, like, when you come in now, they immediately take biometric data. So, you know, your fingerprints, you know, you do a health screen, and, you know, and instead of them looking at an application, they're looking at the person. And if you're from a country that is, like, say, like Egypt or Tunisia, that isn't, you know, exactly at war or anything like that, you don't gain entry into Europe. You know, you're kept aside. And if you try to come back again, you're immediately flagged in a system and you're sent away. I mean, they've new directives on, it takes, was it like, you get 12 weeks for process and then another 12 weeks to sort out whether or not you're going to stay, and then they send you away again. I mean, that doesn't exactly, like, they're trying to streamline the process. That doesn't exactly sound like the worst thing in the world to me. Unfortunately, I don't think we have the administrative capacity in Europe to deal with such a large number of people coming in year on year on year. And this isn't going away. This is going to get worse as time goes on. But there's other things that I don't like, is like, if a country refuses to take in people, you're paying 20 grand, you know, per person you refuse to take. And I don't like the idea that some bureaucrat in Europe will be like, well, I mean, Ireland is a small population and they have a decent sized landmass. You should take X amount of people. You know, that I'm not too comfortable with either. You know, so
But we've lost control of that now. You know, up to this point, we could have said, well, look, you know, maybe next year our housing crisis is in a much better situation. Yeah, we could take a few people. The year later, maybe our housing crisis is not too good. And we say, oh, sorry, we can't take as many this year. So we had control of that.
Well, yeah, but
mind you wouldn't think we did.
Did we?
Look,
but we had control. Yeah, look, now we don't.
But look, I understand where you're coming from there, right? And I know the whole argument of, like, vote them out and get new people in, right? But in the same vein, I could say to you, how long have we been talking about vote people out and get new people in and we're going to sort out our healthcare system? And how long is, like, our healthcare system is getting worse and worse and worse? Do you know? So the idea that, like, I'm not a fan of people in the EU. I'm a fan of the idea of the EU. Because back in 2018, when we had that really hot summer, the farmers were in trouble. And if it wasn't for the EU, we wouldn't have had fodder for our cattle. And that would have had a massive, massive impact on our agricultural sector, which our economy, you know, really, really, you know, depends on. So there are, you know, like, there are benefits to being in the EU. And the idea that maybe, you know, some group in the EU are like, right, Ireland, you're not doing, you know, you're not doing your job properly. We're going to make you do it. They might actually do it. You know, but there's other things about this I don't like.
Can I ask you a question, though? Genuine question.
Yeah.
Do you have faith in the Irish people that they will vote the right people in the next general election?
If you asked me that 2 months ago, I would have said yes. If you ask me now, I would say no.
Okay, so the answer is no. And me, I'm the very, very same. So, in other words, the power that's already there would continue to do the exact same thing. So at least
I think that could get a lot worse, because I have visions of a Labour kind of Sock Dem, people before profit, Sinn Féin government, you know.
And by the way, when
that happens, this show will be broadcast live from some other country in the world.
Okay, and if they were in power, Niall, if these people were actually in power, would you not prefer then for the EU to have the EU migration pact?
No. I still, the whole idea of giving away sovereignty, particularly over our borders, certainly, look, for example, there's a law coming in on the 7th of July. People probably don't even know about it. It's an EU directive that all cars sold from a garage forecourt and all new cars must be fitted with automatic speed limiters, which will slow a car down depending on the speed limit on a road. Bet you most people didn't even know about this, right? It's coming in the 7th of July. I don't really object to stuff like that. You know what I mean? We can talk about it, we can debate it, and I know there's going to be ways around it and people will hack it and all sorts of things. For example, phone roaming, I think, is a great idea. That's a great plus from the EU, by the way, the fact that we don't have to pay roaming charges when we travel all over Europe. They're wonderful things that have come out of the EU, good things. So good things come from the EU. This is not a good thing, as far as I'm concerned. I do believe I do believe the practices within it can be good, but at the idea of handing the power to Europe to control our borders is not good.
Niall, percentage of the EU migration pact, how much of it do you agree with?
Probably 70 to 80% of it.
So 78 to 80% of it. Now, how much do you agree with the Labour Party?
No, but you're missing the point. You're talking about 70% of the EU Immigration Pact. What's in it, I agree with. But I don't agree with Europe controlling it. That's the point you're missing.
Well, what I'm trying to say...
Because I don't believe we can do it, firstly.
I'm trying to say, look, the horse is already bolted. We're screwed in any way, so we may as well give it to somebody who may be more responsible with it.
What's in the EU Migration Pact, I've been saying for 5 years. You know, better screening, reception centres, you know, biometrics, all the stuff that Dave mentioned there a few minutes ago in relation to fingerprinting with Eurodac. All of that stuff, I've been saying for 5 years. We should have been doing all of that anyway. Let me go to Jackie as well. Jackie, hi, how are you doing? We're going way out of time here. Jackie, hi.
Oh, yeah. Just look, at just quickly, I was physically sick last night. I actually physically sick when I saw the results. I couldn't believe it. And I don't, I actually don't know why it's actually affecting me.
Are you sick? Why were you sick? I mean, I wasn't, when I saw it, like yourself, I was really disappointed. But in saying that, I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah. And look, I was at a town hall meeting last night, got to do with a power plant that they're going putting in the other side of Portumna, in the middle of a rural area where there is houses around, and the stuff, there was a lot of mistruths that were told by the company and all that. So there's a whole thing going on there. And then I got the, because I was watching on the phone as well, and then I saw the thing and I was just going, oh, Jesus. Really and truly, this government...
What about what Steve says? Because I have to get two people very quickly here.
What about what Steve says?
Clearly, the Irish government are incapable of looking after immigration. So surely anything is better than that.
Well, look, going back over the last year, what did Helen McEntee and all the others say? That they have the best system there. There were its fingerprints. They were doing, whatever data search on all these people coming in. They were saying this originally, that Ireland had one of the most stringent.
But that was a lie, because Grip Media printed a story where the Garda Síochána hadn't actually put the fingerprints to Eurodac of one single individual 100%. In this country.
Yeah. So now they're telling us, now it's Europe that's going to do all, you know, that we'll have all the help and this, that, and the other. I actually think it's all a lie. I think it's just another, here we go, and it's like a highway into this country. That's what it's going to be now. It's going to be a highway straight in here, and it's not going to be people running from wars. It's not going to be all our doctors, our nurses, and all these people that we need, these people. It's going to be people who are looking to try and scam the state. That's what it is.
And the EU EU Migration Pact helps with that. And that, see, this is what the problem that's happening here is, because the people are so blinded by their hatred for the government that they're just going against everything the government says.
No, Steve.
Hold on a second, Noel.
No, Steve, that's wrong. That is absolutely wrong. People agree, and I can tell you now, the vast majority of people of Ireland, if they read the EU Migration Pact, in principle, they agree with what's in it, right?
Okay.
Apart from the fact that we have to pay for people we don't take, right? But what they're saying is there's no reason for us to hand over our sovereignty to Europe or this one little bit
there
of protection. Let me finish. It's because we should be doing this and should have been doing this anyway.
But we're not.
As I explained in my Tesco's analogy, that's not a reason to give away power to the European Union.
It absolutely is. We have an incompetent government. Would you prefer an incompetent government? Do you think that the EU is competent or incompetent?
Incompetent by times and competent by other times. It's equally like our own government. They can be incompetent too. Yes.
Oh, they can be. So, but who's more? Who would you trust more?
You're asking me, you're giving me a Hobson's choice. That's not I don't want a Hobson's. No, what I want is, I want an Irish government that will take responsibility.
I'd love that. That'd be fantastic, but we're never going to get it because the Irish people are too stupid. They vote in the wrong people, and it's as simple as that.
Sorry, Jackie, what are you trying to say to
me? We have an election. We have an election coming up very quickly. So we have
Please, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you have a but Jackie, that's a Hobson's choice too, isn't it?
Yeah. No, the funny thing is I've been discussing this with people this morning. A lot of people didn't even know about that, what was going on with the immigration pact. They did not know that that was happening in the Dáil. And so it's only a certain amount of people that know what's actually happening and have an opinion, whereas others, it doesn't seem to affect them. They don't take note of this kind of stuff. And again, the mainstream media, it's all now all about Simon Harris. So the whole visual thing is taken off what happened in the Dáil last night. And suddenly we have this happening now, or the bomb threat in the Taoiseach's
house. Oh, I've seen that, yeah. That was disgraceful, yeah. Okay, but look, I have 10 minutes left to get through everybody. Jackie, thank you for that. Let me go to Sean. Sean, hi, how are you?
How you doing, Niall? How are you?
Go ahead, Sean.
Well, just back to your point. Is it a good thing? Sure, look, it's a good thing and a bad thing, I suppose. But as you said there, and you keep pointing out, to stay up there, I don't think the penny's dropping. It's the sovereignty aspect of things, and ear the Irish people say, you know, which is very unfair. You know, like as what Jackie just said there, I don't think even half of the country know that this actually happened last night now. You know.
Well, Steve says it's better because the Irish government are incompetent, so you might as well let Europe look after it.
Look, that's Steve's attitude. He's going to roll over and take it, and that's the way it is with Steve. Yeah. I mean, look, Steve, look, I'm not being listening to you for the last 10, 15 minutes. If you want to do that, Steve, fair play to you, but the fact of the matter is, I care about what happens in this country. I really do, and I hope... look, as Jackie said there...
making an emotional decision.
You keep saying about the last election... who was voted for, who wasn't. I didn't vote for any of the Muppets. I don't know how they could end, Steve. I really don't. Yeah. I voted for who I voted for, and I know he didn't vote for a fucking Muppet. But the fact of the matter is, I'm hoping for the next round of elections that it will happen, that we get a decent government together.
It won't.
You know,
you're making emotional decisions, Sean. All of this is based on emotions, and we can't give away our sovereignty. I think it would be fantastic if we didn't have to give away our sovereignty. That would be a great idea.
That EU are good for the country. EU, where's our fisheries? Our fisheries are fucked over the EU because we can't do this, can't do that. There's so many limitations that the EU put on us.
Definitely,
it's fucking believable. And somebody else mentioned earlier on, Noel, he says, we're an EU great for giving money for supplying us with fodder. Believe me, anything we get off the fucking EU, we pay tenfold for it.
Sean, let me ask you a question. If I gave you an option, Sean, I'm gonna chop off your right leg or I'm gonna chop off both legs. What are you picking? You're gonna pick.
Well, obviously it's gonna be one, you know yourself, Steve. But the fact of the matter is, we can't.
I'd rather have no legs chopped off, to be honest with you, Steve.
It's not going to happen, Steve. If you just give up now, Steve, we're all fucked, sure. I have to do what I have to do as a father. So if you actually think that I just look, fuck it now, it's done. It's not the fact that, Steve. That's a terrible attitude to have, mate. It really is.
Okay, my attitude may. You think that my attitude may suck in this situation?
But it is defeatist, yeah.
It's not defeatist. No, it's not. No, it's realistic. Oh, and if this country was run like a business, for Christ's sake, you know, you'd go, hold on, the management are bleeding terrible. We need to get somebody new. Does it entail giving it over to somebody in a different country?
Can I just say something before we go?
Yeah.
Nail something out here. Like, every fucking morning and every night that we go to bed, all we're hearing about is fucking immigration and about what we can do for the immigrants and this, that, the other, and this. It's just literally, it's been on the agenda the last, I don't know how long now. And the fucking funny thing about it is, as what one person said there about the health system and about that, it's everything's fucking crumbling around us. And it's all about the immigrants and about what we're going to do with them. And, we can't be leaving them in tents. We can't be doing this. We can't be doing that. What? It's fucked. The country's fucked. It's fucked. And it shouldn't be our top agenda. This should not be on the agenda every day of the week. This should not be our top agenda that we're pumping in millions into. As one caller said, what are we, a small rock? We're not a big country that we can dissolve, they can all dissolve into the EU. We're only fucking little Ireland here. A little tiny country on our own. How much can we fucking do for these immigrants? Literally, guys.
Okay, thanks for that, Sean. Sorry, I have to go to loads of people. Suzanne, hi. How are you doing?
Hey, Niall, how are you? I'm just listening here.
And by the way, Suzanne, I'm really stuck for time, but thank you so much for everything you did over the last month. You were there all of the time to help us canvass over around the campaign, and you were so good, and I owe you immensely.
No, thank you, Niall. It was my pleasure. And it just brings me, I just have a couple of points to make. It was an honour. And Niall, you know, you said yourself a month ago, would you have said that the Irish people won't vote in the current government? And today, you know, they will. And I feel the same. And that's the frustration. And that's why I campaigned for you. And I campaigned tirelessly. And I worked with you every day. And I know your values and your morals. And I genuinely, genuinely believed getting fifth, you were going to get fourth, and you were going to go to Europe. And it's so disappointing. However, and I mean that sincerely, and I'm back on the track again because I'm not going to sit back and let this country go down the tubes. I just want to say one thing very briefly. I was in Madrid for the weekend, completely different city, walked around till 12 o'clock at night, mothers, grandmothers, children, everybody out for the whole weekend in Madrid. You can't go into town at night anymore unless you are taking your life in your hands. So you don't see 60, 70, 80-year-olds in town anymore strolling around having dinner. Back to the migration pact, I am furious, to be honest. And to your point, and I'm just going to say again, I just can't take the attitude of that our governments are so crap that they can't manage it, so that the best option then is to hand it over to Europe. That is literally acknowledging that we have a government in place that are just fucking idiots. And I'm not going to accept that. And I'm going to be fighting with every core of my being for the next election for whoever I believe can get across the line to make sure that we take out the governments that are not doing things properly. And to go back to a point you've made consistently, we can do all these things now. We can stop illegal immigrants coming into the country simply with no docs in hand. So all the stuff that we're talking about, given over to Europe, we can do now. So I suppose the big point for me today is I've been talking to a lot of political people yesterday and today, and people genuinely, not far right, thugs, but genuine people like myself and you are talking about protesting outside Boyle over the next couple of days. I'm just throwing it out there like, onto your show. This is not a far right march. This is genuine people who feel that this is the wrong way to go before the election. Feet on the ground, peaceful protests outside the Boyle. Will people who are on this show today who are annoyed, upset, disappointed or raging, will they make themselves be heard and seen by standing in solidarity outside the Doyle whenever this protest is arranged? And I'm throwing that out of the show now.
Sorry, what do you say? What do you say? Say they won't now.
They won't. They won't turn up because you know as well as I do. Yeah. Let's say you had 1,000 people turn up. You know, that's still not enough. The Irish government aren't listening. There's nobody listening to you. You can scream and shout all you want.
No, hold on. I'm not talking about screaming and shouting. That's quite the contrary. This is a silent, peaceful protest. And I was part of the protest, the last protest.
But Suzanne, can I say something to you? I tend not to agree with Steve, right, because he irritates me. But in saying that, people have changed the way they protest. The last decent protest in this country was the water protest. 120,000 people walked down O'Connell Street, right? And they were unified. And it changed government decision, it changed government policy, and we didn't get charged for water, right? So it worked, okay? And before that, I think there was a big one for income tax and something else. I can't remember. Anyway, people have changed the way they protest. They feel now, they go online on Twitter, they shout and roar for a few minutes, and they think that's their protest. They think that's them done, so I've done me bit. And, you know, I know there were some decent protests before the last election. There was one or two down around Customs Quay, and, you know, there was, I don't know, somewhere between 5,000 and 7,000 people maybe at one of them, which was reasonable enough. But in a population of 5 million people, it's not an awful lot. If you want to achieve something, it has to be a mass protest. And for some reason, Suzanne, they just don't come out. They just don't. And I don't know why.
Well, I know that 90% of people, I'm being told at the moment, like, don't really care enough. I mean, there's loads of people on your call today, which is great. But 90% of Irish people don't care. But 10% do, Niall. And I suppose you mentioned the water protests. That's kind of, I mean, genuinely, I've been talking to people since last night and this morning. they're all of the same mindset and ilk. It's not, you know, to do any harm or do anything wrong, but just to literally put feet on the ground silently. So is there any way, and I'm throwing it out there, you mentioned it, Niall, the water charges one. That's the kind of 100,000 people. There must be 100,000 people out of the population in Ireland who feel the same as we do this morning, that this vote last night, which was quite tight, and that's obviously why they kept stalling it back and stalling it back to, you know, to coerce people or to encourage people to vote yes. But I'm calling for something like the water protest. Nothing dramatic, just people literally feet on the ground. And I'm throwing it out there. Because there are people talking about doing it, and I'm looking for support.
Okay, well, look, Suzanne, I will catch up with you, and we will look into that a bit deeper. I have to just go to one more caller, because we've gone way over time today. Suzanne, thank you very much indeed. Let me just go to Stephen. Hi, Stephen.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hi, Niall. A fantastic debate, but from both sides. Very passionate. So, but from my point of view, I don't think it's going to make one potty dam. I actually still think that the majority of people, no matter what, will end up in Ireland, because Europe doesn't want them. We have the landmass. They now have control of the laws. They can just decide we're taking. It doesn't matter about negotiation. How much negotiation does the Irish government do? It hands everything over. And we have... The EU is not an efficient place in any shape or form, because they're paying farmers for not to
not to use the fields.
That's nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, that's nonsense. If we can't, if you know what I mean, if we can't organise that, how can we organise hundreds of thousands of people, you know, just arriving on the border?
Well, we can't organise. We've proven that over the last God knows many years. And Steve's argument was that, well, sure, if we're incapable of doing it, which we seem to be incapable of, mind you, most of the people are not incapable. It's Helen McEntee and our Justice Department are incapable of.
Yeah,
if we're incapable of doing it, well, we might as well hand it over to Europe, and maybe then it might get done. But that shouldn't be the answer.
I don't think... We've handed it over. It's a done deal. But I don't think one thing is going to change.
It won't. Nothing will change. It'll actually get worse.
You know, and I think, if I saw it right, Helen McAtee was calling people racist. For her to use that word in the Doyle is actually marking her, to me, as a racist. Because she said, we don't, you know... You as a people don't.
Oh, that word is just used to silence debate. We know that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. But, you know, I just don't think anything's going to change. I'm very disappointed. But if you actually you look at the quality of our politicians, Simon Harris, a complete failure as health minister.
But they're all, with the greatest respect, Stephen, they're all failures. Sure, I spoke to, you know, two Fianna Fáil politicians today to get them onto the show. And both of them said they would have loved to come on and talk about it, but it was a bit awkward. And the reason it's awkward is, Stephen, because they didn't want to vote yes for it, but they did because they towed the party line and towed the whip. I mean, that's despicable. They're all a bunch of cowards. So the only reason, the only people who wanted this, really, was Helen McEntee, Simon Harris, Catherine Martin, you know, the heads of each party. She's kind of acting head at the moment. They're the only people who wanted this. Most of the politicians didn't want it at all, but they just went with the party. Look, unfortunately, Stephen, I've run out of time. I've gone way over time, and I do apologise. Let us know, by the way. Keep texting, keep WhatsApping. The number is 085-122-55 if you want to send us a message in relation to it. Unfortunately, I don't have time to play all your WhatsApp messages today. Loads and loads of messages, by the way, coming in. John O'Brien says, why didn't we have a referendum on this? Citizen Not Serf says, this is serious. At each turn, we see this rogue government undermine the sovereignty of Ireland and each individual citizen of the nation. Every action disempowers the people and transfers said power to the NGOs, to unelected bureaucrats at global entities. Kevin says 79 people have decided the fate of this entire country's immigration policy. 79. This should have been a referendum. Take the names of every TD and pass this on. In other words, what he's suggesting is remember those names in the next election. And he's probably right. We did, by the way, try and contact Hannah McEntee to get her on. We contacted the press office at justice.ie and we were told, unfortunately, the minister is not available or is unavailable. We did contact numerous politicians from Fianna Fáil who voted on it, but none of them would come on the air. I could get any amount of them on the air who didn't vote for it, by the way, but the rest wouldn't come on the air. Thank you to everybody. Listen, we do all of this show every single day for you because we want to give you a voice, you a platform, and that's why we're doing it. So when you're listening to all these voices every day, that's hard work. We put the hard work into that. Myself and my two colleagues here, there's three of us who do this show on a daily basis. Please do support us. We need your support. We have a bigger plan. It won't only be this show. It'll be other shows as well. We're moving on to something a lot bigger, a massive plan. We've been talking to investors. We're not going to get enough money out of that. So we need your support as well. So please, it's going to be something that people will take notice of. Because on my own, on this show, yes, we get a lot of downloads. Yes, we get a lot of live views. But it's not enough. It's not enough for people to pay attention. It's not enough for the government to pay attention. I'm not pissing them off enough. So we have a bigger plan, a grander plan that would piss off them, RTE and everybody else. Because we need an alternative media, don't we? Well, that's the plan. And that's part of the plan. And you are going to be part of that plan. You will always be part of that plan. We need a conservative, maybe if you want to call it centre-right, media organisation in Ireland. And I'm going to bring you that in the next couple of months. But I can't do it without your help. So please do support us. Go to nileboylan.com. I'm going to give you more information on that plan over the next month or two. And hopefully we will be able to do it. But, and I'm not going to say the name of it yet, okay? He's saying in my ear, tell them the name. No, I will. But I will, I promise. And you will be the first to know. The listeners of this show will be first to know about it, I promise you. Until then, listen, thank you very much indeed. Support the show, www.nileboylan.com. Even just the price of a cup of coffee. That's all we want. Go to the website, donate or subscribe. The price of a cup of coffee, that's all it is. Price of a cup of coffee. And we're going to share that cup of coffee between the three of us. It's $5.99 or a fiver, whatever. If you can donate more than that, please do. Please help us and please support us to continue to give you this platform. Without this platform, things don't change. Thank you, and I shall talk to you again tomorrow. Until then, have a great day.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.